Tanya. Hello, everyone. As Tanya said, I'm Janet Sherlock, and I am very appreciative of ODF for giving me the opportunity to speak with you about designing your organizations to support and hopefully be successful with AI. And again, thanks to Craig and Tanya for coordinating this session. I'm so pleased to be here with the ODF community. Just to first off, this session is not a presentation and a Q&A. Feel free at any time to just jump in with any questions, comments. I know a lot of you are very seasoned organization design professionals. So if you have your own experiences or want to challenge something or speak up, please feel free. This is a completely open dialogue for all. A little bit about myself. I have been in the organization design field for a short while compared to a lot, although I do have decades and decades of organization design experience, but it's really from a practitioner perspective and not a practitioner who sits in an organization whose function is only organization design. But I've had different executive and senior leadership roles at ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, a small design firm called Calico Corners, Guess, the apparel company. And most recently, I was the chief digital and technology officer at Ralph Lauren until October of last year. Okay, so in that role, I was responsible for end-to-end technology, but I was also responsible for our e-commerce business globally. So it's both a P&L job as well as a technology role. So it was kind of like two hats. Within that, I also was responsible for analytics, AI, etc. So this topic is literally like one of my biggest passion points. So I am very pleased to be able to discuss this with you. I did earn a doctorate at USC, and I specifically studied technology leadership and essentially how they overlap with each other. So, if you have questions about, chief AI officer, chief analytics officer versus a chief information officer, or how those kind of things, feel free to ask those as well, because I did study that separately as well. This topic is really not about that. It's about AI strategy and building an organization to support it. So I'm going to bring my slides up now. Hopefully I will find them. I always have a bajillion things open. I do have a bajillion things open. I am so sorry. Give me one second.
We could play the Jeopardy music and stress you out a little more.
I am so sorry about that. All right, let's start it here at the beginning. Go full screen. Now, hopefully, everyone is seeing something. Oh, but you're seeing the. Okay, so we're going to talk about unlocking AI's potential, strategies that align people, platforms, and performance. So, people often talk about technology and process and organizations as a three-legged stool. They'll say, like, it's technology, people, process. I would say that AI has its own three-legged stool, and that is people, data, and technology. Those three things. Those are the three things that power AI. I added this to this slide, money, simply because a lot of people said, well, you still need AI to, I mean, you still need money to power AI. That is true. And if you develop the right strategy with the people, the data, and the technology, what you'll find on the money side is that you will potentially be a lot more successful in your AI utilization, and you can do it probably in the most cost-effective way. So money is important, but the three things that are really important: people, data, and technology. The strategic components. I am going to, I think a lot of the people here on this call are in the organization design profession, and you're probably not technologists. However, I'm going to need to just get into a couple of things technologically to lay some groundwork, especially since, again, the three-legged stool is data, technology, and people. So the first thing I want to talk about is data. If you are consulting clients, you don't really need to get into this too much. But one of the things I will tell you is that data is obviously the lifeblood. It is the fuel that makes any AI work. One of the biggest things I can tell you from my technology background, as well as using AI and creating use cases that run things for an organization and an enterprise, is how important it is to have universal access to data. Okay, so it doesn't mean that all has to sit in one big fat database, but the data has to be accessible in order for you to do the best things for the organization. So if I give a couple of, I don't want to pick at departments, but there are a couple of departments that are most guilty of not having their data available to the whole organization. Top is probably, in most organizations, the marketing department. And it's understandable. The reason for that is that a lot of the data that they have is through agencies or through social media. So, you're using Facebook and the data is there at Facebook. It's in YouTube or whatever the case is. So their data oftentimes sits in a very segregated place. The second most big offender for not having the data integrated is HR. Oftentimes, not just like within Workday, but HR departments use a lot of, again, third parties, understandable, but their data sits sequestered into different solutions. Like even at Ralph Lauren, I think that the HR team used a different third party that managed our DEI data. And, obviously, benefits are in another place. So it's really helpful to have data be accessible for the organization and not sit in these sequestered little places. You would be surprised at how much you can do whenever you have access to all the data. Again, when you're talking to clients, if you have, this one isn't one that you hound on too much. I think you can probably just brush over it and say, I hope that you'll have access to data broadly and that you have a focus on data quality, because data quality becomes a whole other issue. Again, have a responsibility, I had different approaches and technologies that I leveraged for data quality. It is important. Before I talk about organizational alignment, I want to go to an AI ML platform and what I mean by that. So I don't want to bore anybody, but this is actually a really important element. The secret sauce before you get to organizational alignment that makes AI work in most organizations is somebody, and I'm going to talk about who that somebody should be responsible for having a universal AI ML platform for the entire organization. And what do I mean by that? Is it the cloud provider? No, it is, and this is, a bit of technology here. It is a platform that sits on top of all of the internal data in a company, has access to the what are called LLMs, which is, the OpenAI, ChatGPT, Anthropic, Hugging Face, Vertex, all the ones from Google and AWS, whatever that is, can have access to those and can provide a platform that is what I would refer to as low code or no code, meaning you don't have to be a data scientist, but you have to have a little bit of technological, wherewithal to be able to create your own models. Now, the reason that this becomes important before you get into organizational alignment is that if you don't have a single platform that everybody can build their models on, you'll have marketing build models on some place for customer segmentation. You'll have operations be building models about where sales are. But if you don't bring those together, you can never really get the models to work in tandem. You can literally have a supply chain team and the finance team each doing their own demand planning models. But if they can leverage the same models, they can leverage, or the same platform, they can leverage parts of the models that make sense to work in tandem, work together. So sorry, I don't want to get technical, but this is a very key element in order to make AI really work in a good way. Everything else, once you get data, the AI platform, and then I'll talk a little bit about organization alignment. Everything else after that, which is really important, the governance, how you utilize it, and the processes and operations follow along with that.
So Janet, okay. There's a question in the chat box about what ML refers to.
Oh, I'm sorry. ML is machine learning. Yeah, so okay. I'm not going to get into what the difference between AI and ML is, but I'll just use AI because that's what most people seem to be using whenever they're talking about. So it's machine learning.
And then Janet, while we have you paused, I've had a couple people ping to see if you might be able to switch to be in full presenter mode because we're still seeing your backside and it's this content on the slides a little challenging.
Sorry, I thought I was in full presentation mode.
Yeah, we were still seeing current slide and then the upcoming next slide. So let's see.
Are we in full presentation mode now?
Nope, we're still seeing current slide and next slide. So
sorry. Let me do it from
if you go up to display settings in that screen you were just showing, I think you can swap your screens.
Is it yet? No, it's still showing the same thing. Where do I need to go?
Display settings up at the top.
There it is. Okay. Hold on.
I think you can swap yours, or someone else suggested just.
Sorry.
There we go.
Yay! I'm so sorry about that. Yes, I am an official IT person, believe it or not. Okay, so on this slide, again, I want to start with the quadrant that says technology. And it's interesting because, you know, in anything that you're doing, whether it's a transformation project or effort or anything, you know, generally speaking, you don't lead with technology as a strategy. One of the exceptions is in the AI space. I personally do believe that understanding exactly what people are going to access to work on their AI models is extremely important. If you don't, guess what happens? Then people just will start building their own technologies and their own models or buy third-party solutions. It would be, this is not necessarily the best analogy, but it would be like different departments saying, well, I'm going to have my own ERP. I'm going to like stand up vendors here and pay vendors there. It could be like different departments using this, deciding I'm not going to have a standard HR system. I'm going to keep mine on the spreadsheet, or I'm going to do mine on Workday, or no, I'm going to do mine. It's not quite that severe, but it's not that dissimilar. Having a standardized platform for everyone is a pretty key element. So again, one of the data and the quality, having this technology, this platform makes sense. Then what you is important, then I'm just going to flip to my next slide here. Now let's talk about people for a second. My recommendation, and it's just a pretty strong recommendation, is to have a three-tiered approach for your organization for AI. First is to have a center of enablement that is going to decide this platform and where it's utilized and how it's leveraged and the data that's all behind it, and the data science itself, the actual creation of a model. And what is a model? A model is something that says, I'm going to segment my customers this way. I'm going to optimize inventory this way. I'm going to create my demand model this way. I'm going to create these customer service models. Those are models. Federated data science means that not necessarily having a central group that does that, but having each group that has specific knowledge and responsibility in an organization have their own data science knowledge. And it doesn't have to be deep data science, as long as you have a platform that doesn't require deep data science, they build their own models. So in example at Ralph Lauren, there was a federated group in marketing. There was a federated group in the supply chain team. There was a, I would call them a small federated group within HR. There was one in operations. There was one in digital that would do all the things that you did on, you know, RalphLauren.com. So there were pockets of expertise that created their own models, but everyone built their models on the standard platform that the entire organization used. Now, to go to democratize data and insights, we had licenses on this platform that allowed everyone across the organization. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say everyone. It wasn't like every store employee had access to it, but we had thousands of seats. And so let's just say you were in store operations. You had access, not to necessarily a model, but if you wanted to understand the correlation for what was driving people, if they came into the store, and what made them actually, there's something called a conversion. You know, whether, if you buy something, you convert it into a customer. So you were a visitor and then you became a customer. If you wanted to look at the correlation between, you know, who bought and why they bought, you could actually do that analysis on your own. So by democratized data and insights, that means that you train up a lot of the organization on the utilization of the platform so that you can do your job better. So again, a center of enablement that has data, platforms, data quality, and assistance for creating models, federated data science models that actually run the business, and democratize data and insights to allow generally a lot of the people on the team to be able to do their job better and gain the insights that they need. So federated data science, the data feeds back into technology to make it run. Democratized data and insights give you information so you can, again, do your job better.
Yep. Janet, there's a question in the chat. Over the last 2 years, we've worked with the client building an AI center of excellence. Mm-hmm. And given their federation, a federated business model, we incorporated a federated approach to embed AI within business. The question is, how do you have adherence to the policies and responsible AI practices?
Okay, so you asked a question that there's a couple of things that I want to address. So first, I suppose I should have started by saying this type of recommendation that I'm making applies pretty broadly. But I would say that there's definitely exceptions. I think, as we all know, as organization design professionals, that there is never any one size of a shoe that fits everybody. And there are certainly things aren't black or white. They're gray, and there are different shades of gray, charcoal gray, light gray, et cetera. So I would say that some of the areas that this would not fit would be things where, let's say a company, what they do is they actually sell AI services or data services. You probably, because that's a product, it might actually be a different scenario than this. I'd say if you're a very small company, I'm on the board of directors for a $1.4 billion restaurant company. And I'd say this largely applies, but they don't have enough scale to actually have that much of that federation. So I want to comment on what federated means. So like there are some companies that their divisions are so different that they may actually have one of these scenarios for each of their divisions, depending on how different they are. And then there's a company, like if I use an example like Disney, let's just use Disney. They're not a client of mine. These are my observations from looking at them from the outside. Their businesses are pretty different, right? You know, you've got films, you've got, you know, TV subscriptions, you've got parks. It's very, very different businesses. However, one thing is the same across these things, which is that consumer. So if it were me and I were Disney, how I would structure myself would be sort of a modified version of this. I would have some of the elements be across all of those divisions, but yet I would have each division have their own because they're very, very unique from each other. So what you might say is behaviors that you want to look at and understand in a park might be different than what you would do on a streaming service. So I'm sorry. So I hope that sort of addresses that question about someone said that they have a federated model that they're trying to do. Now, the other thing that they mentioned, which is how you govern. And I'm so glad you brought this up. That is another one of the secret sauces of having that AI ML platform that I mentioned. So if I give the example at Ralph Lauren, we use this one particular platform and it connected to OpenAI. So I didn't, within that platform itself, it watched what went out and what came out. So meaning that I didn't have to worry that our trade secrets were going into the LLMs, I'm sorry, the large language models for anybody who's not familiar, because I had something, a governor in that looked at what was going out, and it was my own platform. And likewise, coming out, there were things that looked for, if we were looking for information on sentiment on Ralph Lauren is an example. If something came out that was like improper or whatever, it could screen those things out. So you had a way of monitoring and gauging and putting guardrails both outwards and inwards. So that's another important element of why I believe that technology, that three-legged stool, is a really important pillar to be able to successfully do things. Part of the reasons early on that a lot of companies failed with AI was that they were like, oh, do I give people access to OpenAI or not? So one of the things that you can do when you have your own platform is you can create your own GPT that actually just sits on top of it where you can actually start to govern it. So don't want to get into too many of the technical details, but but thank you, whoever asked that question, excellent questions. So where I think that you need to start with technology, again, the data, that platform, because that platform, and in case you haven't heard me say, it's a big unlock to making your AI strategy work. And then that model of center of enablement, federated modeling, and democratized data and insights is the second part that really makes it work well. So then what is HR or the people and culture? So now I'm going to move from the technology piece of this pie to the people and culture side. So when you really get into it, your HR team needs to ensure for the organization a few things that are very, very important. First is, and I'll get into governance in one second, because I think governance is a big key piece to things. One of the things that I think that the HR department should be checking for is which roles are becoming automated and what is that implication going to be to that to people, that department, and the overall organization. If I give one example, again, from my experience, we were the first thing that we did. There's lots of chats going on and I actually can't see them. So Craig, if you can make sure that you jump out to me, that'd be helpful. But one of the first things that we used AI for, like a lot of companies, was we automated the e-commerce description. So if I was going to describe this, we trained the AI to speak in the voice of Ralph Lauren and be able to describe this product because we had copywriters that wrote them. So, then you say like, oh, well, can we just eliminate all the copywriters? Well, no, because there's a lot of other things that they do on the side of that. So, but it's really important for, HR to understand how much are things getting automated and where should we be looking at that as far as, people's productivity, but at the same time, making sure that the culture is right. Now we get into education and skills. Do you remember me saying training? We've trained thousands of people at the last company I was at on this particular AI platform because we wanted them to be able to do their jobs better. We didn't force people to, but we really wanted to train people on the skills that they needed to be able to leverage the platform and the data to do their jobs better. And again, from an HR perspective, I encourage HR to really be the ones that lean into, do you have a model like I described, that CDF model or CFD model? Do you have a centralized analytics function? Or how should you be structured to support AI in the organization? So I want to just make sure I'm like staying on top of questions and comments. Craig, anything that we want that's coming up? Oh, you're on mute. You're still on mute?
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Downing just had a suggestion that people might want to take a look at.
Please. Jim?
Oh, just passing on a piece about how your enterprise structure can drive the deployment of these AI development of your AI strategy in government. And I just mentioned, integrated enterprise like Ace Hardware or McDonald's versus Allied, Kia, Genesis, and Hyundai versus Allied, Disney Parks, Disney Cruise Lines, and a holding company like Berkshire Hathaway. They would have radically different deployment models.
Wouldn't agree with you more. And that's why I don't want to. I'm glad that somebody brought up something so that I had a chance to clarify that this is not a one size fits all, but this size fits, this model does fit a lot of organizations. I've been advising companies for the past several months. This has been probably the thing I'm talking the most with companies about. And it is a pretty effective formula for most models. But like you said, Jim, if you've got a holding company, you've got a company that has very different models. Even when you start to get into things that are the same, you mentioned McDonald's, which I loved, Jim, or you looked at a Ralph Lauren or something like that, that has global organizations. You still want to have teams in different geographies have access to the data that applies to them. But at the same time, you would need to make sure that you are aligned to how your company is still structured overall. And in the case of a McDonald's, a burger is a burger. In the case of a Ralph Lauren, a polo shirt is a polo shirt. So I think you really still need to, look at the structure. And I do believe that this recommended structure can apply well. Okay, so from a governance standpoint, governance is tricky, and a lot of people have different perspectives as what a governance group should do in relation to AI. And I'm sorry, but before I get to governance, let me talk about use cases again. I almost don't like the term use case because everything is literally a use case. Whether or not AI is like running a big thing, some function, or it's some small element to it, AI is going to be, or if it isn't already in many of the organizations you're in or the ones you serve, it most certainly will be. So almost everything is a use case. So you need to be really careful not to try to boil the ocean as far as, you know, managing or logging all use cases. One of the things that I tell companies when they talk about like, well, where should I be governing or what should I be watching for is we've all been using AI for 10, 20 years. The newer part is the generative part. So while you need to have in your models, make sure that the data is good and that the output is good, the part that really becomes, lack of better words, dangerous is whenever you have generative outputs, recommendations to things, or synthesized opinions about things. You really need to be very careful about what that is that's coming out. So my recommendation is if you want to actually draw a good line to what you need to really govern, anything that is generative in nature should probably be the highest on your list. And then what you want to do is look at what is the risk of those things that are being generated. If I were a leader of an airline and I was using generative AI to actually do predictive analytics on airplane maintenance, that's a pretty high risk one. So I'd be really looking at human in the loop management on that. And when I say human in the loop management, meaning that you don't let the AI just go and do something, you know, in my case at Ralph Lauren, when even though we wrote AI copy for describing what this blouse was, it just didn't flow onto the website. We had someone that looked at it first, made sure it was good before it got posted on the website. That's what a human in the loop does. But human in the loop for a description on, you know, on a blouse is not as important as human in the loop whenever you're doing airplane maintenance, right? So my recommendation for anything that's critical infrastructure has a harm, can potentially harm your brand, harm your name, harm individuals. Anything that can cause harm should always have a human in the loop element to it. Where now, this is the part that I recommend governing, which is documentation as to who that human in the loop is. Otherwise, it becomes not, you can't really determine where it is that responsibility is for. So from a governance board standpoint, my recommendation is, generally speaking, monthly meetings that have technology representation, legal representation, security, HR, strategy, corporate comms, and the heads of those federated data science groups meet monthly to go over what are the new use cases? Are there any that need to have the human in the loop validation that's done? Anything that from a legal or regulatory standpoint that needs to be addressed? And anything from an HR standpoint as far as shifts or changes to personnel or to the requirements for training or culture?
So, Janet, there's another question in the chat. It's really, what have you seen work best to reel clients and to properly assess where and how allocation of funds are distributed for AI work?
Well, that is an excellent question. And I hate to say this, it's not an easy answer. And part of the reason, and I don't know who it was that asked the question, part of the reason that it's really challenging is if I run the HR department, and I have my own budget and I go out and I buy a solution for, I want to do some kind of aspect of people analytics, or I wanted a third party to do analytics on my customer engagement. I'm not customer engagement, my employee engagement scores, which is a common use case in HR departments. They'll get your engagement scores and then you'll hire a third party that'll go and do the analytics on it. Well, if that sits in that department, I don't know how you can. So there really needs to be, going back to the governance, that's one of the elements that I think is important to understand exactly who has what money appropriated to AI, because otherwise you don't really as a company know what you're spending on AI. But if you have, if you're doing a lot of it internally, which I have to say, I'm a pretty big advocate of trying to do things internally. However, you do need to use third parties. And when you do use third parties, I think that they should be governed as well. Again, I've got a pretty good document on governance as well. And I'll give you a link for the article that I wrote about that. But it's important to try to gather the whole company spend toward AI. If you're using a singular platform and have it in one area, it's much easier to look at the costs that are actually appropriated to AI. And then you can start looking at it and saying, okay, well, which use cases get us the most? This is another thing that I have to say I struggle with. I struggled in companies I've worked for. I've struggled with companies that I have advised. There's not always the biggest ROI on the AI specific things. What I try to recommend is looking for AI where you get a hard dollar payback. So if I give an example again from my previous world, we had a third party that was doing AI, they were doing email campaigns. So they would create what the campaign would be. They would create the title that would go on the subject line of the, and so we started doing that ourselves using AI. So I had an actual dollar amount that we stopped spending. So then we can reinvest that as long as, now that was in the marketing department, as long as, again, from a governance standpoint, you can try to pull that in. If it stays in the marketing department, you might lose that value for the organization. But if you're trying to, and you can log where the cost savings are coming from or incremental revenues coming from, and then try to use those funds to drive the longer term capabilities. That's usually been my recommendation.
And Janet, there's one other question that goes back, I think, to your earlier case about the oversight. There's a question about the technology can kind of take over some of these tasks and roles. What is your suggestion for when to incorporate human decision-making and oversight when technology seems to have assumed these roles?
Yeah, so I do recommend a lot of oversight. I think that there are some places where you can just let the technology run. It is important, again, my general recommendation is to tease between regular AI and generative AI. And again, generative AI means that you create some novel either recommendations, content, pictures, video, it creates some novel content. I do recommend that's where I recommend strongly governing is in what's generated by AI and selecting those human in the loop elements, because in each department, again, you go back to what area knows what area. So if I was, you know, an airline, and going back to my example, and I did have some dialogue with one of the major airlines and how their model is for governing in relation to, it was actually specifically on maintenance. You know, they had a human in the loop process, but they weren't logging down who actually was supposed to be the human in the loop. So I think that that's important to say, this is the role that's responsible to actually for this output to be the human in the loop. And then if you have to look at that shift by shift, if there's any issues, that's what you need to do. I don't know if that answered your question, but
It seems to have. There's been no other response to it.
Small organizations. So small organizations. Okay. So I mentioned I'm on the board of directors for a $1.4 billion company. The CIO there was telling me, I was talking about very much the same thing I'm talking to you all about. And one of the issues that he has is that he doesn't have enough partners from a federated standpoint to support, their AI efforts. So if I give an example, he doesn't have somebody in store operations that was, or restaurant operations that was necessarily like a good key person. He had great partnership in finance. So finance had their own kind of citizen data scientists that they could work with, but in operations, they didn't. So they had like labor models and the IT department was having to do them. And he kind of felt like, I'm a little bit alone here. I don't necessarily have like an equal good partnership on this. We're doing it. And then it's like, it's not until it's actually out there and deployed that they're saying it works or it doesn't work. And so he said, so do you think I should slow down? So my recommendation was, no, you have to start someplace. So in his quote, federated model, he may have only had one place where he had a good federated partner, but you need to fill in the gaps until until they can get there. The other thing I think that is so critical, and I've talked to the company that I'm on the board of and other companies that I've advised, which is these days when you are hiring people in small companies, this matters even more. You have to hire people with that gene. And that means that they have that capacity or capability to be able to learn, not just prompting, because people will say, oh, well, I'm training people on prompting. Well, I hope you can train people on how to ask good questions or they already know that. I'm talking about being able to actually, without necessarily knowing data science, but know how to actually think about how they can leverage data to do their jobs better or make better decisions. To go back to that example that I gave, like, I want to understand the correlation of, what drives sales in a particular store. Or if I'm seeing, examples that we had at Ralph Lauren, shorts sales were down. And it's like, what's happening there? Well, we found out that it wasn't really the shorts. The issue was is we didn't have enough t-shirts because, correlation of buying t-shirts and shorts together, and we didn't have the right assortment of t-shirts out there. So therefore the sales of shorts was going down. So you need to have people who can think like that. So I think that that's another thing that is so important for HR departments and their talent acquisition to be thinking about, which is making sure that your organization is seeded with that right kind of mentality. The other thing that I think it was really helpful for me at Ralph Lauren was having the utmost support from our CEO. So my CEO would be in different meetings and would say, I'll give an example. The store design team, they would design everything from what's in the windows to how they design the stores. He would say, are you working with Janet's team on how to start analyzing, what kind of things you should be putting in the windows, how often they need to be changed, what resonates with people. So having him be this massive advocate, not just for the utilization of data and AI, but an advocate for that model that I described. We have the center of enablement. We expect you, the owner of your area, to understand how to use data in the best way, and then support for the organization to learn how to leverage data to do their jobs better. So it was very, very helpful to have that support from the very top and emphasizing it almost in every avenue and every time that he spoke to the organization. Okay, so someone asked a question about, Jamie asked, this is a great question, on use cases and the framework for prioritization and assessing ROI of potential use cases. What have I seen worked best? So the tendency in most companies is to develop a model that uses ROI, which is fine. The only thing I would say two things I would add to this is, if your company or the company you're serving has a good intake and prioritization for all the other IT stuff going on, adding this to that is really helpful. If you don't have that and you're using a framework to look at the different use cases and saying, well, what makes the most sense? ROI would be potentially one of the vectors I would look at, but I would also look at things that sometimes you want to build a capability that you need for the future, or you want to, it might not have the first immediate ROI, but maybe it is, time savings, but that time savings is going to be reinvested in something else, so it doesn't have a hard ROI. So I think you need to be a little bit flexible in what that model needs to look at. Our model that we leveraged at Ralph was not necessarily a quote flexible model, but it had different weightings, things that were brand enhancing, things that were cost savings, revenue enhancing, profitability. So those were the different things, and they were weighted differently to actually look at, and things that were just going to be capabilities that we needed. So if I give an example of capabilities for you all, just a good capability for us was vision recognition, meaning that if I had a picture of something, I could describe that picture through AI. Yeah, was there a big ROI on that to start with? No, but think about it. In a company like that, you would need that as a capability to do a lot of different other use cases. So I would look at core capabilities in addition to ROI. But whoever your client is that you're working with, if they at least have a framework and they're looking at ROI, they're one step ahead of a lot of companies.
So Janet, it looks like things are winding down a little bit. Are there a couple key takeaways that you would want people to walk away with?
Sure. I am going to throw up my screen really quickly again, just to show you my last slide. Which, now, is everyone seeing this?
Yep.
Okay. So these are the things that I would say, in addition to the three pillars or the three areas, which is data, technology, and organizational structure, is making sure that you do have alignment in your organization for those three things. So that is that build and execute an enterprise AI strategy. The second is the thing I mentioned before, which is try to use some shorter term savings or efforts that fund longer term capabilities. And unless it's critical, like, it's critical infrastructure or drug R&D or something like that, other than those kind of things, don't expect perfection. If I go back to the scenario where I said that, like, we had, copyright, what was amazing is we got 80% of the way there, but to fine tune it, to get to the point of it being 100%, that was the old 80-20 rule. 20% of our effort got us 80%, but then we literally have to invest so much more to get that much better. So if you don't expect perfection, you can get a pretty far way with relatively small investment. And then last but not least was that build that culture for AI. It is important. Some people think that it is villainous. It's real. It's here. Helping your clients and your organizations build the best structure is critical for everybody. I do have what we can forward this along, Tanya, which is there's a couple of articles that go into deeper detail so that you can actually have something to hold. But there are a couple of articles, one on structure and one on governance, that may be helpful for people. Is there anything that anyone wanted to talk about?
We did have one more question pop into the chat here from Wanjun. From org design perspective, do you see the model of central AI enablement team works better or federated model of AI in different BUs or functions, or a combination of both?
I think it can be a combination of both. I did work with one client who had a centralized analytics team. And unfortunately, what ended up happening was not only did they hate the IT team because they couldn't agree on data and they couldn't agree on a bunch of things. But what was worse is they actually were disagreeing with each of the departments. So, they wrote algorithms for the app that the company had. They wrote the demand plan. They wrote, so they were the ones who did all these models. And each of the business areas were saying, like, I don't agree with your model. Like, I have more expertise than you do. So it was even worse. And they were going out and buying other third parties. So you were spending money on both sides. It was just a disaster. When they eliminated the chief analytics officer role, they ended up with something better. Now, that all being said, it depends on the company and what they do and how they're doing it and the nature of them. But largely speaking, I like a center of enablement for technology and data, a federated model, and again, democratized data and insights. That is the general model that I recommend.
And Janet, I think this is really a design choice. And in any of the work that we do, we all are making choices around the design. And each choice has pros and cons. And we as designers have to help the clients think through those and come up with the design choices best for them.
Absolutely. And that's the case for everything, isn't it? Yeah. So and that's the best that we can do. And if there's one thing that I'm hoping that I didn't want to get technical with everybody here, but if there's one thing that I was, I hope able to articulate, which is the technology in this space does matter. So I would at least, even if you can't, you don't have that as your background, at least be able to say to your clients, so do you feel comfortable with your technology strategy? Because you're not going to end up really being able to support the organizational strategy without kind of having some knowledge or expectation for there to be a technology strategy, especially in the AI space.
All right, Janet, I'd like to thank you for you taking the time and sharing some of your insights with you. And Tanya, you are going to be distributing recordings?
Correct. I'll send an email out to everyone once we've got the recordings and the articles that Janet referenced ready to post on the website. So you have a link to track those down. And then I just want to thank you both, Janet, Craig, for making time to share things with the group today. Very much appreciate it. And if anybody has any other, wants to hop on to your camera and ask Janet any quick questions, please feel free to do so. Otherwise, we'll wish everyone a great rest of your day.
Yeah, I'll stay on for anybody who wants to chat for a couple of minutes. So, but thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, we got folks dropping.
Oh, go ahead, Matt. I do have one question to ask. Janet, this was fascinating because I worked on a very similar program in the life sciences industry. I guess the best question is that those materials that you shared are the best places I can learn what you just shared with us this morning. Is that correct?
Yeah, these two articles get a decent chunk of the way there, Matt. So hopefully they're helpful. And you can always reach out. I'm happy to you know, whatever it is that I said, or even if you had a specific scenario, because again, you know, you mentioned life sciences. I want to be really clear, like life sciences has a different level of precision that's required than, you know, say retail. So I just want to, if there's anything specific that you wanted to, you know, talk about, let me know. Happy to.
I'll be in touch if that's the case. We bought a product from one of the big four consultants, and they basically gave us their model, and then we had to make it up as we went along. Of course, there were a lot of pitfalls. So I appreciate you're hitting all those points. It's been extremely helpful as a guidelines for thinking about everything.
Yeah. And I mean, it gets really tough. You know, you mentioned the big four. You know, they're not, that's not a platform. So they probably had some you just have to be careful. There's a lot of snake oil out there as far as the technology goes. There's a lot of snake oil as far as the advice goes. So it's a tough area right now to like tease through. So anybody who needs help, I'm happy to do what I can.
Yeah, that sounds great. This was an AWS resident industry standard platform, and then we had our own internal GPT, but great. We didn't know what to do with it. That was the problem. Like, we didn't know what to do. There was like, we were just fishing. So I'll be in touch. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, Jen, that's good to hear. That actually sounded good. So thank you.
I'd be curious, Janet, to see, are you finding any programs that people who need, like you said, you need to have a better understanding of this in order to be able to weave it into your design work. Are you finding, are there, programs that are available for people to kind of do this introductory, or is it really just research and diving in? And
it's a little research, a little diving in. There are some decent introductory courses on like LinkedIn to kind of get an understanding. A lot of things are training people as individuals to do things, which is very different than when you have to support a company or an enterprise to actually execute. Very, very different things. I mean, you know, for me to talk to my daughter about, you know, trying to write a better paper is a lot different than, you know, trying to get a company to be able to have, results through AI. So I'd be careful a little bit about what you get online, because sometimes it's very individual focused. The other thing as well is, I mean, you know, if you have access to some of the papers from the BCGs, the McKinseys, again, be a little careful as well. Gartner has, you know, because it's, you know, they understand from a technological standpoint. I can't underpin enough the importance that technology plays in this. If that's not part of the discussion, the wheels fall off the bus too. It really does in this space. So.
Sounds like it's kind of like org design as a whole. There's no place to go get your degree in it. No place to go. It really is kind of building and developing that knowledge.
You know what, Tanya? That's a really good analog. It really is.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. Anybody else have any questions, or shall we?
Thank you, Janet. Super fantastic. Missed you at the conference this year, but this was wonderful. And so during the conference, our company just announced, well, we knew it was coming, our own version of our GPT, Eagle GPT. So we've got various apps. So I'm super curious now to see what we do with it. And that model you had was fantastic. And combined with the org framework of really understanding what type of organization you have and what those run rules are going to be. So super helpful. Thank you.
Well, anyway, well, good luck. Good luck with your own GPT. Matt mentioned that they've got one. And he's at Big Four. He was talking more of the hyperscalers and those providers. But I think those are the right direction. So good luck.
Yeah, do you have any inkling of what percent of big companies have that yet, or where we're at in that maturity?
Yeah. So I do a lot. Most. I was at a Blackstone event not that long ago, and so what they were doing is they had people like me. There was only 12 of us, so it wasn't like a big group, but it was big pharma, big insurance. I was the smallest of the companies there. They were trying to look for those niche players to invest in, to see if they wanted to make investments. They were shocked. I think they were like, their brains were a little bit rattled at how much everybody has their own GPT. And then just like Matt said, I'm sure I've left Ralph Lauren, but I guarantee that they're not quite getting that utilization out of their GPT that they could or should. That being said, don't be afraid. It will come. If I can tell a little story, like one of the things that I've been in retail for 30, almost 40 years. Every morning I would wake up and I'd look at the flash sales, the sales that happened yesterday. So what my team, when I left, was trying to do was to build the capability. It would say sales were down here because this weather or not enough customers or the whole, like getting into the details. Then what you want to get to is now it makes recommendations for what you do with that. If you don't start somewhere and have that core GPT that everyone's just playing around with and not really knowing what to do with, you're never going to get to that point. So having the capabilities, super important. Patience, persistence, and continuing to add data that your employees can leverage. That's another thing. That's a whole other thing, is making sure that there's enough things that they can grasp onto. The easiest thing is to start with is standard operating procedures, like, how do I submit a T&E, or how do I do this, or what are our benefits? For it to be asked questions, not just out there on the internet, but what internally can you use? And then try to keep building and building and building onto that. It's a secret.
Love it.
Sorry, I'm like,
I love your energy. It's just a...
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Janet. I got to run right now.
Me too.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We'll be in touch.
Have a good one, everyone.
You.
Bye now.